Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
We love the 1980s wrestling era when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
And now for something completely different.
Hey, I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm in 3 Halls of Fame. For the young fans, they don't give a damn. They just give a damn about themselves and what they're hearing now. And I got no problem with those rules. I know the rules going in. I'm happy to play the game that way.
And when Ivan came off with that knee drop from the top rope and he bent me, I thought that something happened. I couldn't hear a thing. You could have heard a pin drop in that arena. It touched me so deeply that when I went in the dressing room, I really felt depressed.
I'll tell you that, I'll tell you right to his face. If Hogan and I, if he wanted to get in a real street fight with me, trust me, he would lose, and he knew it.
You know, that's the other thing. They give you the belt, and they're like, okay, you're in charge of me. I was like, what?
When you mentioned a guy like Harley Race, that kind of legendary status, it's obvious why people would get upset.
As far as I'm concerned, Roddy Piper was not a wrestler. He wasn't even a good worker. If he had to go out and work his way to the top and not have good friends like Jim Barnett. I mean, I'm not saying he's not a good guy. He's just not a tough guy.
Bro, I swear to you, I don't have an ego. Like, I don't give a crap. That stuff is not important to me. People don't know me. They have no idea of who I am. They know of me as being a fictional character that they saw on TV.
People didn't understand that, you know, the guy they saw in the ring that happened to be using his real name and happened to actually be the president of the company, they really believed that that guy that they loved to hate was actually a pretty decent guy. And I think many people have the perception that I really was that character.
And welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, returning guest, one of our favorites here, founder and owner of ProWrestling.net, legendary wrestling journalist, Mr. Jason Powell. Jason, welcome back. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. I don't know that anyone's ever described me as legendary, so I'm going to take that.
Just me, I guess. You got it. Come on. Legendary. Come on.
I'll go with it. Whatever you say. Legendary yeah. Beats the hell out of what most people call me, so let's go with that.
What is going on in your world? What are you up to lately?
Oh, man. If we're talking work-wise, it just never ends. You know, I mean, there's so much. There's just so much content now with AEW having as many hours as it does on top of what WWE does, and then trying to find time for TNA and some of the offset, you know, the smaller companies. It's It's a lot to the load is increased and it's a lot to keep up with. I don't even know what's going to happen when I try to take a vacation one of these years.
Crazy. And I remember the last time we talked, God, it had to be a year ago. It's like our yearly thing. I was saying, is there too much wrestling? Do you think it's too much wrestling now? Do you think it's way too much wrestling?
For me personally, absolutely. You know, for the fans, it's nice they have a choice. I do think that WWE manages its time well, you know, with because the three shows feel different with Raw, NXT, and SmackDown. I think AEW would be wise to just ditch the Rampage show. You know, if you want to keep Collision around whenever the new TV deal comes up, I would recommend a brand split at that point. But Rampage is just a worthless hour of television, and it's not necessary. And for that matter, I don't even know what they're doing with Ring of Honor. It's just there. Some people watch it. Most people don't.
It is crazy to think, like, okay, AEW has all this television. But, like, what are they doing with it? You know what I mean? Like you said, SmackDown is way different. They get more, you know, to different wrestlers than Raw. Usually NXT is a way different product. It's almost like, what are they doing with Rampage? It's almost like an afterthought, and even an afterthought creatively and booking-wise. They just throw stuff together.
Yeah, here's your four matches. Here's your four random matches. That's what it is most weeks. It's a dead brand. And for that matter, they've managed to even kill the Battle of the Belts brand. I mean, I know it's only a quarterly thing, but can anyone point to that memorable Battle of the Belts episode that we thought would have been memorable? I mean, there are none. And they've been doing a better job with Dynamite lately. I'll give them that. They're incorporating. Last night was, as we record this, was a rare exception because I think they were in a French-Canadian town. And so I think they kind of pulled back on the promos, which is understandable. You know, that season premiere episode, a lot more mic work. They've been incorporating more video packages. There are some encouraging signs. Collision, you just don't know what you're going to get. It's a show that really lacks an identity. And like I said, I hope that, you know, they have to wait until they know what their TV deal is. And if Collision is going to be part of that and it's going to remain 2 hours, I really think they'd benefit from just splitting things up. And that way, I mean, it would help them on multiple levels. It'd be easier for fans to know who they're tuning in for. If you're actually going to a show, you're going to feel like there's a better chance of seeing the people you want to see if you know which brand they're on. There's no guarantee because they're so bad about putting out lineups. But it would help with that. I think there's just a lot of perks to going with the brand split. Even if people say, WWE did it first. Well, you know, that happens. What's going to make your product better?
Yeah, they've got so many guys under contract there. It's crazy. It's like WCW back in the day. You know what I mean? So just too many guys under contract. Might as well do a little bit more of a split and split them up a little bit maybe.
Yeah, and I mean, Tony has kind of used the fact that he signed so many wrestlers to justify the need for more television content. And I just don't think that's how it should be. Like, just because you've signed them doesn't mean that you need more television. Maybe you should show a little bit of discipline and not sign so many people. And then you don't feel obligated to find time for everyone with Rampage and ROH and all these shows that I think are watering things down. Put out the best television you can. And like WWE has Main Event. You never hear them talk about it. You know, it doesn't matter. And that's really what I think Rampage, if it's going to stick around, needs to be, is that show that if you know it's there, great. If you don't, oh well, let's focus on the show. You know, clearly Dynamite is the A show. I think in time, if they're smart, Collision should feel equal, like Raw and SmackDown, where, you know, sometimes one brand's going to be stronger than the others, but the goal isn't to make one of them stronger. It's to have two good, strong brands and just, yeah, quit watering it down and quit. And with Tony, he's just overworking himself in a booking Ring of Honor and all this other stuff that he's doing. And the sad thing is, man, I think if he had his way, they'd have more content.
Crazy, but true, I think. But with that, do you think that Warner Brothers Discovery with, let's say, a new deal comes up, because I know they're coming up on deal rights here. Do you think that they want Collision, Rampage, Dynamite, Battle of the Belts? I mean, they want less shows with better ratings? Right? It's like, what's the mindset there?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. No one knows. I mean, we're dealing with a company that has movies nearly completed and decides, we're going to take the tax break, which is utterly ridiculous that they're even allowed to do that. But that's what they do. I mean, they're, as much as Tony loves David Zaslav, he seems to be the only one in entertainment that does these days. And so we don't know what the hell kind of an offer they're going to get. And if you're the network, boy, I think they probably want more because they're kind of turning True TV into their sport, another like a sports network, essentially. And so I could see them wanting to put some wrestling on that platform. And for AEW, you know, if it's the plus would be you're more likely to be able to pick the night you want. So if WWE just decides to, we're going to move Raw to Wednesday. Okay, well, now you get a little flexibility there where they don't on TNT and TBS because of their NHL and NBA deals, where maybe they can go to True TV. But of course, the downside is that it's True TV. You know, it's not TNT or TBS, but maybe a True TV becomes an option for Ring of Honor. That the network hasn't shown any interest in that product. I don't think it's wise. I think less is more for them. But, you know, it's television. They're going to do whatever they think makes them the most amount of money today. They're not thinking long-term about the future of AEW. They're just thinking about what makes them money.
It does seem like they will get a bump from WBD just because it just seems like, you know, WB got a huge bump in pay. And it just seems like sports in general and sports entertainment in that, you know, that realm, it seems like they're all getting a bump in pay, but it doesn't know. It doesn't seem like the ratings will justify it, but they'll get one anyway. That's what it seems like to me.
I think the bump is warranted. It's just the question is to what level, because, you know, they took this deal at a time when they had no leverage and they have proven themselves to some extent. I mean, you can say what you want about 800,000 viewers and the demo they get. It's not what it once was, but as you still see, you know, top five in cable for the night on a regular basis, that sort of thing. So I think they've earned an increase. The question I have is whether, even if they get a really nice increase, is it, well, two questions it raises for me. One, is it enough with all of the roster additions that Tony has made? I mean, some of the rumored numbers, I don't know that I believe the Tokyo Sports number about Okada, but these are still very lucrative deals. And we see people coming into this company all the time. We rarely see someone leaving. I can't imagine what his payroll is. And the other question is that no matter what he gets, even if it's a great deal, I'm going to be wondering, could he have gotten more had he just had a representation instead of doing all of this himself? Does the network look at it and go, yeah, we'll do business with this guy. We got a live one here.
That's what I'm curious too. Like, will he just take a little bit of a bump? Will they get what they want to get? Will, you know, will they move from Bleacher Report to Max maybe as well? I mean, that's out there because it's one of those things where Bleacher Report, every time there's a pay-per-view, there's some sort of screw up. It's not the best service. I remember I ordered Forbidden Door. It came in Spanish. I had to get a change. I mean, there were so many issues with it. Is that a part of the new deal? Like, hey, we can get on the streaming service and maybe a better streaming service.
I know Tony Khan has expressed interest in it. You know, it's that's the big question mark. They've launched essentially BR Live or something, Bleacher Report, some option on Max where they're charging people for a sports tier. I mean, in a perfect world for the fans, it would work like Peacock, where you just pay for whatever the Max is, which is more expensive than Peacock is anyway. But you know, if you just paid for Max, you'd get all those AEW pay-per-views as part of your service. But what we're seeing already with them, when they launched that sports tier, they're giving it away for free. I don't remember when it kicks in. It may have already kicked in with the tournament or it's post-tournament for basketball. But you're going to have to pay on top of what you pay for Max to actually be able to see this stuff. And so I think it might end up, if it goes there, it may be a model more similar to UFC on ESPN Plus, where, yes, you have to have ESPN Plus in order to have the right to spend the, you know, 70 whatever dollars it's up to just to order a pay-per-view. And so I could see something like that, where, yes, you have to have Max in order to see AEW's pay-per-view events, but it's not going to be just included with that payment that you give to Max every month. It's going to be a payment on top of that. But I mean, total speculation there. Ideally, yeah, they're going to find there would be a nice, it'd be a great thing for fans if it was just you went to Max and there's a AEW hub. All of their classic content is there. All of their pay-per-views are there. But that's kind of what WWE has set the expectation for. But if you're AEW, you also have to look at it and go, man, we're doing really good numbers. You know, the weekly television might not be anything all that special, but we're doing good pay-per-view numbers. And it, well, is Warner Brothers Discovery willing to pay enough to justify AEW giving up that pay-per-view revenue? And I just don't know. I mean, they're not known for spending right now. That's a, you know, that's a network that everybody considers to be on the cheap.
Definitely. I'm just surprised with Bellator, because obviously they got bought by the PFL, and then all of a sudden that doesn't really kick in until 2026, so they're kind of in limbo for 2 years, but they're still going to have Bellator shows, so where do they land? And boom, they got to deal with Max like right away. I mean, that was pretty quick. They got it, and then you look at it and you're like, wow, AEW couldn't get a deal with them in years, so it seemed. Who knows if that's Tony's doing, but crazy to me that, wow, it's like, wow, Bellator got a deal with Max basically within like 2 months.
I think it's probably because AEW has been so successful on pay-per-view. You know, I can't imagine, I don't follow MMA closely at all anymore, but I can't imagine that Bellator is doing numbers anywhere near what AEW does. And so I just think it's an easier negotiation if you're looking to get something on the cheap like a Bellator than it is to, okay, we've got a, you're making how much in pay-per-view? We're getting a cut of that through BR Live. And in order to get it exclusively, we've got to pay you how much? And I could see there being a little sticker shock there. It could also be the thing that makes them attractive to other streamers. So let's say Warner Brothers Discovery either does or doesn't strike a new television deal with them. It doesn't have to be all-encompassing. You know, it can be, we have the TV rights, but you do what you want with the pay-per-view rights. And then Tony has the option of either sticking with where he's at and doing, you know, old school pay-per-views, or potentially finding a different streamer, which I don't know legally. I don't believe he's really been able to go out there and see what the lay of the land is. If there is going to be interest from one of the major streamers, you know, WWE is going to be on Netflix. Does that make a Amazon more likely to go, oh, well, they've got theirs. Well, why don't we get in this game? And it's not going to be as lucrative as what WWE gets, obviously. But even Peacock, you know, if they, I kind of assume, I don't know this, but I assume that once the streaming deal with WWE expires, that if WWE is most likely going to move everything to Netflix. And so that leaves Peacock open. But, you know, they also have the ongoing relationship NBCU does with WWE. So I don't know that AEW would be a logical destination, but I can't rule it out either. So, yeah, we just kind of, I think if it were up to Tony, it would all be under one umbrella. But, you know, it takes two to tango. And oh, and I'm sure you've seen this, John, but your woes are over with Bleacher Report, because now you can actually order AEW pay-per-views on Triller and some of the other services, too. They finally gave in on that after. And I don't, somebody asked me, like, is this a sign that things aren't going well with AEW and Warner Brothers? And I'm like, I can't say that I know that it's not, but I think it really is. There's just been so many issues, as you mentioned, with the Bleacher Report streaming service that they just finally had to say, you know, we can't do this. You're costing us buys.
When you look at AEW now, obviously the deal, I think they're going to get a rights bump from Warner Brothers Discovery. Don't know how much, like you said, and maybe some sort of deal with Max. But you, maybe you have to order Max, have to have Max, then you order the pay-per-view, something like that. But AEW has no problem spending money. Warner Brothers Discovery obviously has maybe some problem with it, but AEW has no problem. Have you liked the signings that they've made so far? And do you think maybe overpaid a little bit for some of these signings?
So that's the tough part. I don't know what they paid. I mean, if they really paid Okada what Tokyo Sports is reporting, that's idiotic. But I don't think that's an actual legitimate number. I think it, you know, there's reports that Mercedes is the highest paid woman in wrestling. Let's see what they do with her. You know, it's one thing to sign people, but then you actually have to execute and get the most out of those people. And boy, if you went back to when this company launched and you just told people at that time, the names of the talent that would be on the AEW roster right now, they would think that this company is killing it, because they have made so many big acquisitions and spent a lot of money to do it. But as we know, many of the people that meant something 5 years ago don't mean nearly as much today. And a lot of that is due to the booking. And so, yeah, I think I like all three signings at the right price. I think Okada at the right price is a nice addition. I think you could easily play money ball with it, though, and go, okay, if we're budget conscious, what are we getting from Okada that we can't eventually get from Takeshita, who's a really talented Japanese wrestler in his own right? Why don't we build him up in a major way? He can go. He might even be better. He might fit in better with the style that we work in AEW by and large compared to Okada, who has the slow build in his matches. And that's not, you know, it's just a different style. There's nothing wrong at all with the style Okada works. I actually prefer it in a lot of ways. And then Ospreay, I think Tony may have bid against himself a little bit in probably in each case. I think WWE had interest in all three, but at a certain number. I don't think they were willing to break the bank. And so I do fear that Tony kind of overpaid because he really wanted these people, didn't want to lose them to WWE. But I don't think WWE ever got that serious. So they're good additions. Without knowing the numbers, it's hard to say. But that's just kind of my suspicion, is that Tony kind of has a history of doing that. That's been the rumor, is that, okay, there's people that leave WWE, don't have other options realistically that are on the level of AEW that are going to pay that much. And Tony will just pay them more than he really should have. You know, he could have gotten some of these people for a lot less. And that's great for the talent. And look, if Dad's going to keep letting him spend as much money as he wants on this promotion, his business, but it's not. I mean, you almost have to look at AEW and just feel like this doesn't operate like a normal business would. They're not required to sing for their supper, per se, because they are willing to spend so much money. And we don't know what they're getting in return. I don't think there's any way that they're making money. And I think most people would agree with that. And yes, you do have to spend money to make money. I totally get that. But is this company set up in a way where they're magically going to make money? It's basically been, well, the video game. Well, the video game flopped. Let's be real. It wasn't a successful video game. And that was what was keeping them below the water level. And then now it's, if we get the right television deal, I think is what people assume. And maybe you do, maybe you don't. It's, you know, Tony's going to have a much better idea. But if you don't get it, then what? And even if you do, again, are they paying you enough that you can actually make money? And I just don't know, because of how much he has spent on this talent roster, and it's bloated. There's just no need for some of the people they have to still be there, other than he wants to be nice and honor everyone's contract.
It does seem crazy that Okada's numbers seem that high, because you think WWE was bidding that high? Let's just say if that number is accurate. You think WWE, no way were they going that high.
No.
Mercedes Moné, you think the number was that high? Especially with the rumor of what Charlotte Flair gets paid, and Mercedes wasn't going to be offered as much as Charlotte. Then, like, wow, they gave her $2.5 million a year. It's like, wow, they maybe overbid or bid against themselves. Then Ospreay said in an interview, he wouldn't say how much, but he said he's getting seven figures. So you think WWE was going to give him seven figures? I don't know about that.
No, I don't. And I've, you know, people have said, oh boy, I'll bet they regret not signing Ospreay because he's so charismatic. And Ospreay's great. But when you make a move like that, you know, word is going to get out. And then you run the risk of upsetting the people that actually do make you money. If they're making less, if, you know, and there are times where, hey, tough shit. You know, this is a guy that we believe in and we think he's the future. And so, yeah, we paid accordingly. But in WWE, there are a lot of people who have proven it, that have been in money drawing positions for a long time. You have to be careful not to upset them to the point that they start thinking that, well, if this guy got paid this much, then I need that much, if not more. And so I kind of think that WWE has been calculated with this. You know, it's just run more like a traditional business, let's be real, than what AEW is. And you know, I'm sure in Tony's mind, he has a long-term plan, and hopefully he will get the type of television deal that's going to make this profitable for him. But I just don't know that there's any way he could have known. He just keeps adding and hoping for the best. And based on what he tweeted about to Eric Bischoff about their new media deal, it would seem like he's confident that something is coming. But there's never a time when Tony doesn't make it seem like he's very confident either. So right, it's hard to say, man.
And ripping Bischoff and then doing the same exact mistakes and not learning from those mistakes after saying that he was going to learn from that. It's just fun seeing that going back and forth, because Bischoff came back and said, well, you know, I didn't have daddy's money and spend like crazy and, you know, not run it to be profitable and all this other stuff. So it's funny to see the back and forth between Eric Bischoff and Tony Khan.
It is. And what makes me laugh the most is, if you're Tony Khan and you believe that Eric is just doing this to get attention, you know, it's kind of what's been implied from the AEW side. When people go after them, they're doing it for, they're not genuine. They're just doing it for attention and all this. Well, then why are you giving them attention? I mean, grow up, ignore it then. And he just can't, help himself. And I'm not even saying that's why I think Eric's actually very genuine with his opinions. And, you know, it's some of them I agree with, some I don't, that's fine. But I don't, you know, don't get the sense that Bischoff is just doing this 100% for attention. But even if he were, again, ignore it. You know, I get trolls on social media. I just ignore them and they go away. As soon as you feed the troll, you're just inviting more.
Big time. I can't believe, though, when he went after Disco Inferno, your friend and my friend, that when he was basically saying, like, you're a troll and all, you know, all this stuff about Disco, and Disco came back and was like, no, I trained to be in the business. I drove all the miles. I bled. I sweat. Had the tears for the business. He basically was saying, I worked my way into the business. I trained, you know, under Ole Anderson at one point, and that guy Steve Lawler, like all this stuff that he had to do to get in the business and work towards being a member of the business, all for some guy that's basically rich from his dad's money, come in and tell him that he's a troll. Very weird. But then he gave him the attention that he said he wasn't going to give him. Very strange.
I do think Glenn is a world-class troll, but it doesn't mean that Glenn doesn't have some very valid opinions. You know, I think he does enjoy getting a rise out of people by design. You know, he's a heel, and I get a kick out of it at times, for sure. But he does have some very valid opinions. Some of his opinions I roll my eyes at, as I'm sure he would do with mine. But yeah, it is another example of Tony just takes the bait almost every time. I think he thinks it's, you know, social media engagement. And we've seen him do that where they have a big show coming up and he'll do something controversial and he thinks it somehow helps their cause. We don't see it in the ratings. I'm sorry. It's not working. Maybe it did it one time to get that type of attention. I think he turns off more people than he turns on with it. I've always wondered what AEW would be like right now had he played the role of Oz, just the man behind the curtain. Didn't hear him at press conferences, didn't have the broadcast team drop his name, you know, five times a show. Just was informed that by Tony Khan that we're getting this. Like, great. You couldn't just say, hey, I've been informed without mentioning the boss every time. And that's what he does. And I think Tony has his fans. Tony also has his detractors. Tony needs to remember that he is a trust fund kid. And it doesn't make him a bad person, but it does mean that there's going to be some preconceived notions about him. And when you put yourself out there like he does and come off petulant at times, it makes him and his company easy for some people to root against. I think the worst thing that he could have done was make this a war with WWE. It may have made sense initially when AEW was getting started and Vince McMahon was booking and doing a horrible job and AEW felt new and people were ready for something new. But the moment that Paul Levesque took control and Vince was out, he should have realized, got to pull back on this. This is no longer the move to make, because WWE is gaining in popularity. And the approach, if either stay out of the picture, do whatever you do behind the scenes, let everyone wonder, what's this Tony Khan guy all about? But don't put yourself out there as much as he has, number one. But also, don't polarize. You know, I laugh when I hear people from AEW complain about how polarized things are. Come on. They've added to this. They've intentionally gone out there, in my opinion, and stirred things up. I think they want that AEW-WWE rivalry. And again, made sense at one time to do it. Doesn't make any sense to do it now, because people are by and large enjoying what WWE is giving them, if you look at the numbers, compared to what AEW is. I would have, if I was going to put myself out there at all in Tony's position, I would have been the guy going, enjoy it all. I watch WWE. Keep watching it. We just hope you'll watch us too.
Yeah, it did seem like he was feeding the tribalism that, you know, exists online, and a lot of the trolls and a lot of just the, you know, the quote unquote marks out there. They love that tribalism. I'm a WWE fan. I'm an AEW fan. Well, it seems like so many more people are WWE fans right now because, man, they are hotter than hot heading into WrestleMania. All the numbers are up. The metrics are up. The Rock is there. He's killing it. The social media numbers are up like crazy. It just seems like, man, attacking WWE right now, big mistake, Chico. You know what I mean? Just big mistake.
Yeah, why make people choose when you're the challenger brand? You know, again, times were different. The product was different. People who had were pretty fed up with what they were getting from, at least a portion of the audience was pretty fed up with what they were getting from Vince. It made sense. And I'm not saying you can't have a friendly jab here and there, big deal. But it's gone too far. And then Tony oftentimes will portray himself as the victim in it. And I just shake my head every time he does. Like, come on, man, you've played into this too. This isn't just them. You're not the ultimate victim here. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And I do think that as much as he has fans, I think he turns off a lot of people and would be better off just staying invisible for the most part. So, I mean, make it count. If there's a reason for Tony Khan to appear on television, fine. If there's a reason, you know, if you want to do the media scrums, great. Do we really need Tony sitting by the talent at every interview? Right. No one else does this. Just let the talent do their thing. Come out at the end. And some people, this is just, it's petty. It's not. He is an issue. At one point, he claimed that he was a device. When he appeared on television, he knew the exact ratings that his segments drew. Those days are gone. Tony Khan's big announcement have turned into a joke. Oh, I'm going to put tickets on sale. Well, you could have just announced that. You know what you're doing. It's a ratings ploy, and it's no longer working.
And the last time, I don't remember what it was exactly, but the last time he did a big Twitter X, whatever you want to call it, big like hubbub, and then he was going to say, he's like, watch the ratings on Wednesday, and it came back like 50,000 less than it was the week before. It was like, okay, even that doesn't work anymore, where he's trying to, you know, start fights with Bischoff or Disco or whoever and get attention on the product. It hasn't worked at all.
No, that's what I mean. It's, you know, for a while there, maybe it did, but I think people see it for what it is now, or they're just bored by the act. They're bored by Tony. And, I'm not saying this because I dislike Tony Khan. Any limited interactions I've had with him, there haven't been many, have been positive. I don't have anything against Tony, but I just have to call them like I see them. And in his case, man, I pull back. And we haven't seen a lot of him until this latest, needless thing with Eric Bischoff. But you're right. The numbers aren't there anymore to justify him doing this. And so all of his fanboy defenders, oh, he's doing it for social media engagement. You just don't get it. They act like they understand him on some deeper level. It's like, well, now what?
When you look at AEW, just look at the roster, like, wow, Brian Danielson, Samoa Joe, now they sign Okada, Mercedes Moné, and Ospreay. But the ratings haven't been going up at all. Like nothing. I mean, there's really been no movement. The pay-per-view's been doing okay. But it's one of those things where it's like, wow, does that P&L statement, that profit and loss statement, does that even matter anymore? I mean, you're signing all these guys and you have a great roster, but it's not moving the needle. So you have to adjust, right? I mean, you got to adapt and do something different.
Yes. And I think they started too with the season premiere. I give them credit for that because all of a sudden you're getting a show opening promo. There's a little more video package work. There were more promos throughout the night. It wasn't just matches, matches, and more matches. And it coincided with the change in looks and everything else. And so it really felt like, you know, I kind of roll my eyes like I do when WWE said, we're doing a season premiere. Like, okay, so this is just an empty attempt to get numbers. I get it. It is what it is. But in this case, it actually watching the show was like, oh, you know, things changed. That's great. And so I'm hoping there's more of that to come, that it is going to be a little more of a balance, that they've realized, like, yes, we have great matches, but imagine if we actually put in the work and told stories to set up those matches. There's an audience that will order the pay-per-views to see those matches, but there's also an audience that isn't watching the weekly television show because they're not satisfied. They're not getting the storytelling they want. And my only concern is by Tony not getting that instant gratification of a ratings increase over the last few weeks, does he look at it and go, oh, well, this isn't working. Let's go back to my way. When I think it's his way that put them in this position. It took WWE Raw a long time to pass Nitro after Nitro was by far the inferior show. A long time. I remember watching back then going, is this the week? Nope. It just was, Nitro was, you know, clearly slipping. It was not a good show. People get set in their patterns. And I think for AEW, he started to lose people with his matches, and more matches approach. And now that he's finally trying to do something, it's going to take a little bit of time to get people to see that, hey, things have changed. And hopefully they have.
So WrestleMania, obviously, right around the corner. You got Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes. But on night one, you have The Rock and Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. Do you think, you know, everything's hot right now, everything is going great, but do you think they've done a good job enough of wanting us to see Roman Cody night two? Because I feel like for a week, we won't really want to Rock Roman. Then now we kind of really want Rock Cody, right? I mean, is Rock almost overshadowing the Tribal Chief right now?
Yes. Yes, he is. I think they'll be fine. I think that, you know, they're getting people in for night one with that big tag team. And believe me, it's Mania. There's, you know, people are going to be invested anyway, and the product is hot. But I guess if there's one thing I would have done differently, I would have had Roman be the one that left Cody bloody, just to heat up that program instead of the kind of basic segment that we got from Cody and Roman on SmackDown. But, you know, hey, they're going to have people at night one for the big tag match. And everybody knows Cody's trying to finish his story on night two. So I'm guessing, you know, there's going to be some sort of a I would think that the baby faces lose night one to set up bloodline rules. And maybe all Cody has to do is say that I've got some friends that I'm going to be calling in. You know, if you're going to have the bloodline there, I've got my own friends. And I don't think it was a coincidence that they had that trailer, the semi-truck, with the faces of John Cena and Steve Austin on them. I could definitely see them getting involved night two. But yeah, I mean, I wish that the build to Cody and Roman was stronger than it's been. But, you know, I mean, if you're going to be overshadowed by someone, you know, Dwayne Johnson's a pretty good person to be overshadowed by.
Yeah, arguably the greatest of all time. So, I mean, whenever he does anything, it's like impossible for him not to overshadow everybody, right? I mean, he's just that much better than everybody else.
He's terrific at what he does. I wasn't a big fan of the Rock concert promo. It was fun in its own way, but it kind of veered away from him really being a heel for the night. But, I mean, he's one of the biggest celebrities in the world, and he's a dynamic personality. Yeah, I mean, he's special. And Roman, even though he's really improved his promo game, it's a different style of promo. And so, yeah, it's a little bit different here. But I think ultimately Roman's going to be fine. It's time for him to drop that title anyway. And this Rock and Roll, or the Rock and Cody match that feels like we should be getting a week from Sunday, will actually probably be something we get maybe at SummerSlam, or, you know, it's somewhere down the road, and it's going to feel like a huge deal then. And there'll be plenty of time to reboot Roman, especially if he does as usual and takes some time away.
When you look at Roman Cody, do you think that Roman should win? Do you think Roman should lose? Because I've literally heard two different opinions from people within, like, basically the last day. And I was like, oh, that would be a good idea. And I was like, oh, yeah, if Roman won, that might be a good idea, too, because then you could kind of have more storylines maybe going forward. Because if Roman loses and Rock's not around, like where does the story go with the bloodline? So what's your take on that? Like, where do you see it going?
I think it's time. I think it's time to, you know, finish the story, as they've been saying. Let give Cody his win and then reset. I mean, the bloodline is running on fumes. You know, I mean, yes, The Rock is there, and that is different, but we know he's not full time. Roman and Paul Heyman are still great. Solo Sikoa beat John Cena and then loses all of his matches for God knows what reason. That is just baffling to me. And Jimmy Uso comes off like a shyster used car salesman. He feels more mid-card than anything. So the bloodline isn't as strong as it once was. And so I think it's kind of time to put it to rest, at least this variation of it. Maybe you do bring in a Jacob Fatu and a Tama Tonga, and you try to reboot it when the time comes to reboot Roman. But I do think that this Mania needs to end with Cody going over. You know, the fans look at the way they rejected even The Rock and Roman Reigns because they wanted to see Cody and Roman in the rematch. They want to see Cody finish his story. And you don't always have to give the fans what they want. but you pulled the rug out from under him last year. And I think it worked out fine. But to do it a second year, I think you'd really run the risk of people just losing faith in Cody and just getting even more tired of the Roman Reigns as champion situation. He's been a great champion, but all good things need to come to an end.
Do you think the days matter? Like the days of the actual title run? You know, people are like, oh, he's got to catch Hogan's record, even though Hogan technically doesn't have the record. Does that matter at all? Or that's just like internet, you know, BS. Like, they're not really care about the days. Yeah, they put it on the screen, but they don't really care about that.
I think they did. You know, certainly, they wanted to have him obviously be a long reigning champion, but how long would he have to hold the title to catch Bruno? At some point, you have to be realistic and be like, okay, you know, we got everything we could out of this. Now we're just holding on just for the sake of record books that, if we don't acknowledge them, 99% of our fan base isn't thinking about anyway. So I think the time has come.
When you look at it too, it's funny when people say that, because Bruno had the record like 2,800 days. So he really would have to hold the belt for, I think, 4.5 more years or 4 more years to catch Bruno. That's not going to happen, obviously. So it's like that would be the record. That would be the official record. Hogan technically would be really second, because I know this is getting the weeds a little here, but Backlund lost the title to Inoki in Japan, and they pretended that never happened. So technically, he would be in second place at like 2,100. But if you count the title that Inoki won, that they don't exist, Hogan's in second and Backlund's in third. So he would still have to be 1,000 more days as champion to even catch those guys. That seems like a bit of a stretch as well.
It does. Yeah. And I think at this point, you know, it was, you know,
I'm sorry, 100 more days as champion, but even that just, it might be too long.
Yeah. I mean, then you're postponing it until essentially SummerSlam. And say May, June, July. Yeah, I mean, you could do it at SummerSlam. I just don't think it's worth it. Like, what do you really get out of it other than that one night of boasting that he passed Hogan's record? That's it. It's not like they're not doing business with Hogan. Like, he's Benoit, and they want to erase him from the record books as much as they can. You can, you know, question whether they should be or should not be doing business with Hogan, whatever. They are. I mean, he's going to be doing stuff for them WrestleMania weekend, so it's not one of those situations. So yeah, I mean, if they decide to keep it on Roman for whatever reason, I would hope it's not because of that. I would hope that's not the reason at this point.
Yeah, I feel like they're much more like business conscious than like, hey, how many days? Let's check the record book. You know what I mean? I can't see Triple H going, let's open up the record book today. Can we beat this thing?
Exactly. I'm with you.
Now, a lot of people think, you know, maybe more casual fans are thinking, did the Cody crybabies ruin WrestleMania? Did they ruin the Rock-Roman Reigns dream matchup that everyone thought was going to be the main event?
No. They spoke, you know, and I was somebody that wanted to see Rock and Roman and was perfectly content. I thought it actually made more sense to do that match now and then save Cody for SummerSlam, because that way you could have Roman beat the Rock. And then, you know, at that point, there was no reason to think that Rock was going to do more than a one-off. And so Roman retains the title somehow, some way. Cody gets the job done at SummerSlam. And I was fine with that. But your audience spoke. They told you, no, this isn't what we want. We're telling you what we want. You pulled the rug out from under us last year. And we want that rematch this year. I think it's a really nice problem to have when your fan base is that passionate. Because there's some times where you give the fans what they don't want and their eyes just glaze over and they lose hope. And we're here, it's like, no, this is really what we want, and we're going to be passionate about it. We're going to be vocal. And they got their way. And so, no, I don't feel like they ruined anything. It just, I give WWE credit for pivoting, because in the Vince years, there was no guarantee they would have. We might still be going, oh boy, the fans are crapping all over this Rock and Roman thing. They really wanted Cody, and the old man just wouldn't budge.
That's what it felt like if he was still here, in my mind anyway, that we would have got Rock no matter what. But it's funny, because now we're getting this heel Rock that maybe wasn't initially supposed to be there. And it's awesome. Like, to me, it's like, yeah, those 20-minute promos on Instagram. I mean, this is great stuff.
I'm really enjoying it. Yeah, he is. Like I say, other than the Rock concert, which, I mean, okay, you're in Memphis. How many hometowns does the Rock have? It feels like there's like seven places he goes, and Rock is home. Yeah. That was the only one. Even that was entertaining. It's just not what I was looking for. I really have enjoyed him and this whole Final Boss presentation. He's doing really good work, and it's caused him to shake things up. You know, we knew what Rock was before, and it was extremely entertaining with him just being the baby face and having the jokes at everybody's expense. But this has brought out a different version of him, and I'll bet it's liberating for him and it's fun for him to shake things up a little bit.
When you look at it, it's almost a little bit like WrestleMania 8 in the aspect of they kind of were going in one direction and they made a change. I mean, it all made sense. And I feel like now with a lot of the stuff they've kind of buttoned up and fixed some of the plot holes, like I feel like it made sense because obviously it was going to be Hogan Flair. Then they kind of changed it to Hogan Sid, but it made sense because of the Royal Rumble. It made sense because of Savage and Flair. And, you know, they made the Jake Undertaker thing make sense. So I feel like that almost happened all over again. They made sense where, yes, you do the tag match and then you do Roman Cody because the crowd was nuts and they were giving all those, you know, negative reviews online to the YouTube stuff with The Rock. But it felt like they actually made this made sense. Am I right on that? Are you feeling like they kind of made everything more synergy wise making sense?
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, I think there's still a couple of storyline holes there. You know, like, what is it that Rock said to Cody on night one? Why did Cody want to go along with what he now calls a wank fest of a match? That's never really been explained that I've seen. You know,
he did mention it. The Rock mentions it in that long promo. He said he told him, since I'm a board member here, he's like, I want to do what's best for business. I think me versus Roman's best for business. So then Cody realized he wasn't doing that for best for business. He's bullshitting it. He's doing it because he's like, you know, trying to come into to what we had that was so successful, and he's trying to piggyback off of that. That's like what I gleaned from. But The Rock basically said that in that long 20-minute promo. He kind of covered up for it, I guess.
Yeah. So I mean, you're right, but you're also explaining it for them.
Right. yeah. True. Yeah.
It hasn't been on television. As much as I've enjoyed those video promos, I think that's ground that should have been covered on television, and I think they should have gotten Cody's perspective on it. So yeah, I mean, I think you're right, but I think that with Cody, I mean, they're in a fine place. That's the thing. Or their plot holes, sure, but they've really done a successful job of pivoting. I look forward to both of the WrestleMania main events. There's some undercard stuff that I'm really looking forward to. And yeah, that's just, I mean, right now, all you got to do is hope that the weather in Philly is going to cooperate. It looks like it's going to be a really fun weekend.
They've been having sellouts like crazy. I don't know how many in a row. I don't know if you know how many in a row. I know the last count, it was like 12 sellouts in a row. Pretty damn impressive, considering with, you know, Biden inflation, all this other stuff with how much ticket prices are. Now, it's like, wow, they must be so hot right now. People are like, damn, I'm, you know, spend less money on groceries and I'll buy a ticket to go see WWE. I mean, they've been selling out, I think it was 12 shows in a row.
Yeah, don't even get me going on inflation, because I mean, my God, like,
yeah, it's insane.
I hear everybody complaining about it, and then I see people spending more money than they've ever spent. So it's like, are you really broke? I mean, the entertainment industry is doing well. Think about all these concerts where the artists are charging an arm and a leg now, and they're longtime fan bases are outraged, and yet the concerts still sell out. So it's like, how bad are people really doing? I think we all just like to bitch.
I know, it just seemed crazy because it's like, wow, you know, the which it, you know, which it is, it's just getting too crazy with inflation. But then on the other hand, I was laughing because I was like, oh, that means MSG when I go to this show with CM Punk return, that means it won't be sold out. Nope, it was sold out. 16,000 people. They had to open up the arena a little bit. So it's like, well, I guess nobody cared about inflation enough to not see CM Punk return to Madison Square Garden. Jeez, right. They didn't care. And those tickets were nuts because I went, I think I spent $75, and I had really good seats. A buddy of mine went, he spent like $250 on tickets, and he wasn't near the front. I mean, he was close, but he wasn't near the front. And people in front of him paid $500 for a ticket for a house show. I was like, geez, Louise, like that's crazy.
Man, I'm old enough to remember when the Eagles had the Hell Freezes Over tour or whatever it was, and they charged $100 a ticket and those were probably the primo. I don't remember the specifics, and people were outraged. And of course, they sold out everywhere they went. But at the same time, it was like sticker shock, like, holy crap. And now I mean, I'm not a big spender on concerts, but if there's something I really love that comes to town, I'm not afraid to, you know, I still have the sticker shock. When I dropped like $250 to go see Guns N' Roses in the 10th row a few years ago, they came back like, I don't know, a couple years later, and those same tickets went through the roof. So I guess I timed it out, they didn't even come back. That's right. The tour didn't stop here. But like this, just looking at the pricing charts, I mean, it just shot way up compared. And you would think like for a band like that, their reunion with Slash and Axl and Duff, the first time around, they would have been able to charge a lot more money. But for some reason, it was the second time around, they were able to charge even more. And I think it's just more the ticket business and the gouging that goes on with Ticketmaster and everything else. But that's another story for another day.
Insane, man. Because I had Mania tickets. I actually had Mania tickets for night two. For whatever reason, I kind of got them initially at a decent price, and I basically sold them for double. But nice. In essence, I was thinking to myself, man, I'm going to get stuck with these because nobody's going to pay. But man, people were clamoring and wanting to pay double for the tickets, pretty decent tickets. But I was just shocked. Kind of a portion of me was thinking, oh, if Rock wrestles, like me and my buddy, we're like old school fans, like we got to go. But since he wasn't wrestling, I was like, okay, if we get at a certain point where somebody's going to offer us enough, we have to do it. So they offered us double. I was like, okay, I'm selling them. I'm getting rid of them because it's just crazy. Like, man, these people spend money on tickets. Like they don't care.
And that's what I mean. Like how broke is everybody with inflation? If everybody's got all this entertainment money to spend, it's crazy what you're seeing. And it's not just wrestling. It's across the board, but man, everybody going to spend what they want to spend their money on. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying I personally wouldn't spend that much money, but obviously, I'm in the minority.
I spent $400 on front row tickets to WrestleMania 15. So that's 25 years ago. $400 for first row. Now, I would guess would probably be what, like 8,000 maybe? Something crazy like that?
I haven't even looked this year. You're probably right. I mean, it's a lot of money people spend just to, you know, and it's, I'm a big believer, like if it's for the experience, awesome. If it's, I just want to be seen and be able to tell people. And like, I mean, you no one's stopping you, but I just kind of roll my eyes at that a little bit.
Right. And the thing is like, all right, it was awesome. First row back then, $400, like, God, this is crazy. We're nuts. And like looking back, it's like, man, that was really cheap. We got to keep the chair. Rock and Steve Austin literally fell on us. Like, you know what I mean? And we were in the front row when they were brawling the crowd, they fell on us. So we're like,
and you didn't even sue. I mean, there was your chance. You could have been a millionaire.
Damn it. Oh, man. But it's just one of those things like, yeah, $400 was nothing. That's worth it. But now, like, I wouldn't be able to even $400. I can't get first row at MSG at a house show. It's like, whoo-wee.
A house show. Insane. Isn't that something?
Crazy.
I mean, but this is the same company that not that long ago was like under $20 to go to a show. And not the front row, but I mean, there were a lot of seats that, for house shows especially. Like, you could actually afford to bring the family. Now you try to, I mean, but hey, movies are like the same way, man. I went to Iron Claw was the last movie I went to, and it was the first one since the pandemic. And boy, did I have sticker shock! Like, really? Holy shit, man! It was for a matinee show, and I don't remember what it was, but it was like I used to be able to go to a matinee show for like $5-6, and it was well over double that just for like a 4 o'clock in the afternoon show. Like, all right.
Oh man, I saw Iron Claw. I think it was $18.50 for the ticket, and I think it was. God, $18.50 for a popcorn and a soda. So it's like,
now, where do you live? That's got to be a big difference too.
New Jersey.
Okay. So yeah, you're going to be paying more than we do in Minnesota. It's just the way it, I don't know why, but that's the way it works.
Oh yeah. But it was like, wow, $40 for me to go see Iron Claw. I was like, oh my God, just pretty crazy to think about it. But yeah, you're right. Back in the day,
people aren't going to the movies. It's like, well, because you know, you don't want to take out a second mortgage just to bring your kid to a Marvel film.
Yeah, you can't afford to go to the movies. Crazy. Yeah, hope my son doesn't want to see Ghostbusters. Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm like, yes, can you afford the $20 less than $20 to go see for the ticket? Sure, but you know, I just kind of think of the people that have 2-3 kids and want to make a family night out of it. And it adds up in a hurry, man. And then there's so many streaming options. Like, you know, the theater is great, but for the price you're charging, it's not that great. Sorry.
I was like, Dune 2 comes out. Should I just wait for it's on HBO Max, like for streaming? and, you know, basically pay nothing, or should I spend all that money? It's like, eh, maybe I'll wait till it comes out at home.
This is going to be like the old man edition.
When you look
old at men bitching about modern day prices.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back in my day.
Yeah. $400 for first row tickets. But it's just one of those things where, I don't know, everything is more expensive now, but if something is hot, people pay for it no matter what. And like, that's WWE right now, right? I mean, they'll pay for it no matter what.
It sure seems that way. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Springsteen is one of those acts. You being a Jersey guy, I'm sure you know that a lot of his core fans were like, I'm not paying that much, because he had a pretty good reputation for keeping the prices affordable. And there were a lot of people that he sold out. And I'll bet a lot of them gave in and went to see him anyway.
Yeah.
It's just the way it works. You get angry and then it's like, but I really want to see this. Oh, hell with it. I'm going.
I knew somebody, I think it was $600 a ticket to see Bruce. I forget where he was, but I was like, wow, $600. Oh my God. So, I mean, his tickets went up, but I guess depending on where it is, people are definitely clamoring to see if you're getting $600 a ticket.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a hell of an experience. You know, you're going to get a great show, and you never know when he's going to call it a career. You know, I mean, bless Tom Petty. Look what happened there. And I will always kick myself for not going to see Petty.
Ooh, I did get to see him several years before he died. But yeah, you're right. It's like, boom, they might be gone. You're definitely going to be regretting it, not going to go see him.
And yet Nickelback is on tour. And so is freaking Creed. Like, really?
You know what's crazy? I was looking
couldn't up. You couldn't have left Creed Petty tickets. And I'm just saying.
I was looking up Creed tickets. For me, I just wanted lawn seats. I didn't want to get real seats. And they were $75 a pop for lawn seats. And the lawn seats are normally like $20-$25. So Creed might be hot right now, which is insane.
Are. Yeah. It's not my cup of tea. They're kind of one of those bands I enjoy picking on. But yeah, the reunion, it sounds like they're doing better business than they ever expected they would.
Man, crazy. It's hell. And then
nostalgia
I know.
Nostalgia sells, man.
Yeah, because STP, a different singer, I think it's Jeff Hutt or whatever, the different singer, but STP is coming back and they're doing a big tour. And I saw that their tickets were selling well. I was like, wow, nostalgia.
Yeah, I think they're touring with Live, I believe. Yes. I think it's, yep. Yeah, yeah. I don't know, man. That's a tough sell for me without, and you know, you can't blame them. Is the new guy any good? Is he, I mean, does he sound like Scott Weiland or is it just a different style?
He kind of sounds like him. To me, it just, I don't know, maybe I'm too picky, but it doesn't sound as good. You know what I mean? It's just it's too different.
So I'm an Alice in Chains fan. And obviously when Layne Staley died, I'm like, oh, that's the end of that band. And then they got Duvall. And I actually saw him. I watched him perform with Jerry Cantrell on his solo tour. So I was already familiar with him when they added him to the band. The guy can go. I'm like, all right. Yeah, it's not Layne, but pretty damn good. So yeah, I mean, some bands you can actually, under the circumstances, especially when someone dies, it's a lot easier for me to justify going, okay, you know, I'll give this new singer a chance. And it is when you just kick the singer out of the band and try to replace him with some schmo.
I mean, I was too young when Bon Scott died. I was born in 82, but he obviously died before him. But sometimes the band could be even better. Obviously, Brian Johnson, people will disagree, but Brian Johnson, I mean, he killed it with AC/DC. So you never know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, boy, did they nail it with both of those singers. Holy cow.
And supposedly coming back. I know they're doing a European tour, but supposedly coming back to the States. God only knows what those tickets are going to cost when they come to like Giant Stadium or something. It's probably going to be like $250 a pop for bad seats.
Yes. Yeah. That'll be nosebleed prices.
And it's funny. I got a buddy of mine lives in Florida, but he always comes up for Giant Stadium because he used to live here. But if there's like a big concert and I'm like, oh man, this is how much tickets are. He's like, eh, like Metallica last summer. He's like, ah, screw it. I'll pay $200 a ticket. We're like, whatever. We'll go. Can't even imagine AC/DC is going to have to come up here for it. He's going to be like $300 a ticket. Are you crazy?
But and then he'll they're end not going. Even billing it as the final tour. I mean, they're missing out on money. Why like everybody else?
Yeah. Come on. The Scorpions have been doing that final tour gimmick for like 12 years.
What I wonder what year was it that Ozzy did the retirement tour and then came right back with retirement sucks.
That's like Terry Funk, like, I'm retired, I'm back. That's basically Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah. Yeah, the music industry has kind of learned something from wrestling, I think. Even Foley's making it seem like he doesn't know. He might have one more match. I'm like, oh, please don't, Mick. I love Mick, but please don't.
Yeah, he said, right, his 60th birthday, he's going to have a match.
Ooh, I mean, hey, it's his life, you know, and I wish him well. But, man, What's the Flair song? Leave the Memories Alone.
Yes. Yes. Great song. When you look at it too, Kiss said that they were done. And then now they're in Vegas, I think. So nobody ever really truly retires, it seems like.
Slayer's back doing festivals. I was never a big Slayer fan, but I know they called it quits and they're back. Motley Crue even signed a freaking contract claiming they were done, and we saw how long that lasted. Well, the movie Dirt did well on Netflix. Like, okay.
Crazy, these guys. They never retire. But as we head towards the wind down, we head towards the finish here. Just final, maybe just a couple little predictions for Mania. Seth and Drew, the tag match, and then Roman Cody. Who do you think?
Roman Cody, Cody. The tag match, I think it is the heel team to set up the bloodline rules. And that way, and you have to do it early. They have to be very creative in how they do this. Because if you do decide to bring in, say, Steve Austin, John Cena, or others to fight off the bloodline, you don't want it to completely overshadow the match. And so it needs to happen either before the match or very early in the match so the focus can be on Roman and Cody. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if we get something like that. And what was the other one, the Drew and Seth?
Yep.
That's the toughest one for me. You know, I would go McIntyre, but I'll tell you one to watch is the tag title match. If Priest and Balor drop those titles, I'm going to be even more suspicious that Priest is cashing in.
Oh, interesting. I actually forgot about that. Wow. Yeah. I completely forgot about Money in the Bank.
And he doesn't have to do it. You know, there seems to be some confusion because the old rules, you had to do it by Mania. He doesn't have to do it until the next Money in the Bank. So he does not have to, but I could see something like that, especially with, you know, this being one of Seth's big moments. And it, somebody pointed out, like, it'd just be him doing to Seth what Seth did during the Roman and Brock match.
Yes, very true. And you got to wonder where Punk, I know he's going to be a commentator, but he was teasing he could be a ref. He was teasing that he could get physical. He's obviously somebody to watch too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And he does have issues. His character does with both guys, obviously. Yeah, that was a weird segment. I loved the segment overall, but the weird portion of it was Punk getting the crowd all riled up for him to be the special referee. And then it was like, oh, he's just going to be the commentator? Okay. Where if you just would have started with he's the commentator, people would have been excited about it.
Yeah, true. And then he was pretending, you know, left-handed, of course, that he could do the 1-2-3. Yeah. Crazy. Love the Punker, obviously, but as far as NFL draft, real quick before we finish this up, NFL draft. Who are we watching for? Who do we need to pay attention to?
So I am terrible when it comes to college football. I got to tell you that. As much as I'm an NFL guy, I use draft time and really the draft itself to kind of learn about the college players, because you may have noticed there's a little bit too much wrestling on these days, and then on Sundays. Which is usually unless there's a pay-per-view that night, I kind of treat it like an off day, and I will spend it watching as much football as humanly possible. And if I tried to do the same on Saturday with college football, I would be a single man again. The gal would not put up with that. So I don't see much college, but I just know that for my Vikings, letting Cousins go, which was the right move at the price that Atlanta paid. I wish him well, but I'm happy they didn't make that commitment. They clearly want to move up, but can they find a dance partner is the big question. They've got two first round picks. I wouldn't be surprised, man, if you see them move both of those picks and even next year's first to get in position to take whatever quarterback they want. Whether it's realistically, it won't be Caleb Williams, because I think everyone assumes the Bears will take him. But I think there's reason to think Drake May. They hired Josh McCown to be the quarterback's coach. He actually coached May going all the way back to high school. And then there's a lot of talk that they also like J.J. McCarthy. And I think some of it might also be because Jaden Daniels is expected to go number two, and they probably won't go up that high. But with Kevin O'Connell's offense, it sounds like either May or McCarthy would fit it really well. And so I think that's what they're looking to do. But yeah, I can't really sit here and say, oh, watch for this guy in the draft, because I just don't know.
And I got to mention this too, because I know you're a big Vikings fan, obviously, and I'm a Giants fan here in New Jersey. There was a rumor came out yesterday from a pretty big NFL source, but he was saying that it's being thrown around there, not that it's going to happen or whatever, that they were looking at the number 6 pick, which is what the Giants have, It would be the number six pick and the Giants' second pick, too. So first round pick and second round pick for Justin Jefferson. I was like, wow, that would be, because the Giants need a receiver big time. But I was like, wow, that would be an insane trade.
Yeah, there's been all sorts of Jefferson buzz, and no one seems to, I mean, the team has just repeatedly said no. And I think they have a little more credibility than when they used to do this. And, you know, we'd never trade Percy Harvin. He's traded a day later. I mean, they haven't re-signed him. He obviously wants a boatload of money. And I think he wants guarantees. And that's kind of been the roadblock. I just have a tough time believing that they're really going to move Justin Jefferson. I mean, he just, he's like Kirby Puckett was here, where, you know, if you see a kid wearing a Viking jersey, chances are it's Justin Jefferson. And he's been a model teammate. You know, there've never been any Randy Moss like chatter about, well, you know, he's a great player, but behind the scenes, there's none of that. Boy, and what are you going to go get? You go get the face of the franchise quarterback, and then you take away his number one weapon? I would hope they don't do. I mean, I can't rule it out, but I would sure hope they don't.
That's where I was like, wait a second. Then they're going to have a quarterback with no receiver for him to throw to?
They have Addison, who scored 10 touchdowns as a rookie last year, but he's still no Justin Jefferson.
And you'd want, ideally, you want both of them for a young quarterback, because then, absolutely, you know, you've got a couple options. Just crazy. I don't know if the Giants would do that either. But, man, they need a number one receiver worse than anything. Imagine lucking into that. I know it's a big trade. You're trading your one and two, but you're getting a bona fide, arguably best receiver in the league. If you want to say maybe Tyreek Hill, so then maybe he's the second best receiver. So crazy if they did that trade.
Yeah, and this is a great draft, I know, for receivers. Like I said, I couldn't sit here and break down who does what. But I know with Harrison, and then there's a couple of guys, I think Neighbors. It's a great draft for strong quarterbacks and strong receivers. And so I think everyone assumes Arizona, if they don't trade back, is going to take Harrison. I think you'll be able to get an elite receiver, but are they potentially in the mix for quarterback, the Giants?
I think so. They need one, because Drew Lock and Daniel Jones ain't going to cut it, I don't think, anyway. So I think they got to be in the market for a quarterback and a receiver.
Right. There was
a rumor that they may go for a Dunze and then trade back into the first round late in the round and get Penix Jr. So there you go, quarterback and receiver. Plus, they both know each other from Washington, but I think that's going to be harder to nail than get, you know, I think one of them is easier than getting both.
Yeah. And like the thing, if you guys do go quarterback, the thing I like is the same thing I like about the Vikings doing it right now. You have a quarterback whisperer for a coach. Yeah. I mean, O'Connell got more out of Cousins than I think anyone expected to. And just as your coach got more out of Daniel Jones the year you guys beat us in the playoffs than I think anyone expected him to. Yeah. And so if they can do that with players like that, it's like, all right, if they go get the rookie that they like, look out.
Very true. Give us all your plugs, the Boom Podcast, ProWrestling.net, and everything else.
Yeah, you got it. The Pro Wrestling Boom is my free weekly podcast. Just do a search for Pro Wrestling Boom on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You know the drill on that. Hit subscribe. I'd really appreciate it. The show typically features me talking with a member of the pro wrestling media or sometimes guests from the world of wrestling. It just depends. But it is a free weekly show. Again, it's the Pro Wrestling Boom. The website, ProWrestling.net, is the site that I own and operate. And we have news updates, live reviews of most of the major television shows and pay-per-views and PLEs and all that great stuff. My hit list with the hits and misses on the various matches and segments that we saw the night before, just depending on the company. And ProWrestling.net, please give it a look. Hopefully you will enjoy what you see and make it a regular stop. And then if you want to take your experience to another level, there is the membership side of things. Everything becomes ad-free, both the website and all of our audio content, and there is a lot of it. On the .NET Weekly Audio Show, I co-host with Jake Barnett every Friday, discussing all the news of the week. And then also my Q&A on Mondays, where I take the questions exclusively from the members. Pro wrestling to start, non-wrestling insanity, God knows what they'll ask me on the back end of things, always a good time. And then audio reviews of all those major television shows, pay-per-views, and PLEs. I don't like that they've made us add PLE to or lexicon or whatever it's supposed to be. I struggle with big words, so that probably didn't make sense. But I'm trying, man. I'm really trying. And if you want to follow me on social media, it is at Pro Wrestling Net. Leave the dot out of that one, at Pro. ProWrestlingNet.
All right, Jason, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. I'm off to greet a plumber. I should be watching the Twins on opening day, and instead there's a plumber coming to my house. Can't wait.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.